You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Happy 2026, y'all. It's the year of the fire horse. We promised we lunged it before we all got on. This month, we're kicking off the year with some of our favorite horse shows and settling in for the tougher topics of horse ownership. Thanks for tuning in.
From Heels Down Mag, a podcast where horse pros chat about what's happening in the horse world over drinks. Welcome to Happy Hour.
I'm Justine Griffin.
I'm Jessica Payne.
And I'm Ellie Woznicka. Welcome to episode 144 of Heels Down Happy Hour.
Hi, guys.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Hello.
Is everybody snowed
in? Where did January go?
I know, right? We're half snowed in, but it's been interesting. We got more snow than ice, so very thankful for that. And I think we're getting back to the normal of school and everything else tomorrow.
Okay, so you're almost out of the winter storm then?
For this one.
Until the next round. Ellie, you're just stuck in it, I'm sure, for a while.
Yeah.
Ellie's hunkering down.
Yeah, 18 inches we got. We didn't get any ice, but the issue we've got is just like the temperatures, like our highs for the day are like single digits.
Oh my goodness.
So like it's been brutal. So my horses are all tucked inside and I'm like trying to keep the barn warm and
yeah.
That is pretty chilly. This episode is brought to you by Hits Horse Shows. Okay, so since it's the start of the year, I figured we would share a drink recipe that honors all of those who are better than me and are trying to do a dry January. Are you guys participating?
No.
Yeah.
No.
We're the wrong crew for that.
We do Heels Down Happy Hour and we support dry January. We're just not participating this time.
Exactly. So we do have a great mocktail, though, for dry January, even though it's towards the end of the month. But tuck this away if you're ever going to do a dry month. It's called a Dirty Coconut Coke. And now I will say I'm not really a big coconut person, but this is delicious.
I feel like this is like from the Mormon wives, like the Coke.
Yes, they did. Yeah, like all of their mixed sodas. That's exactly the dirty sodas.
Yes. That's what I feel this is in, you know, honor of.
Yes, and I'm obsessed with that show.
I feel like if there's coconut, I could try a dry drink.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is a good one to ease into it. So you're going to use about 8 ounces of Coca-Cola, a half ounce of cream of coconut. So like a brand that I find at the grocery store is called Coco Real. Then a quarter ounce of fresh lime juice. Throw in some ice cubes in your glass. About 2 ounces of unsweetened coconut milk and one lime wedge to garnish. And basically, you're just going to kind of combine it all and then stir it a little bit with your ice. And if you want to be fancy, you can slowly add the coconut milk at the end to achieve that like gradient color. And then just, garnish with your lime. So as always, we'll share the recipe to this in the show notes. But yeah, it's a good one. It's tasty. All right, Jess, what do you got for news?
So we have been watching the Saturday night classes and everybody kind of going with Wellington and everything else. We got jump started with our season down there and then we come home and we love to watch like Flip My Horse and watch all of it. And I have to give a shout out because Lily Keenan is on fire. I saw her jump the new, she got this Highway TN horse and it's amazing. It's unbelievable. So she did her debut win on that one. Last week and then, or 2 weeks ago, basically. But then the more impressive was last weekend. She comes out on her partner faster that she's had for forever and she wins the 4-star. And so she is on fire and you have to give a shout out because Lillian looks incredible and she always, I love their show coats, which one she's going to wear. She makes all of them. And so fun fact. So shout out to Lily because her two horses, she took a new one to a win and her old partner to a win. And she is, I'm excited to see what she's going to bring.
Yeah, I feel like it's heating up already. And you guys were down there just a couple of weeks ago, right? How did your horses do?
They were good. We had this will be part of it, but Quincy decided to like throw all of his toys out of the crib. Sometimes he decides he doesn't like who he's shipping next to. And he did this like 20 minutes into this ride at 2:30 in the morning. So Doug had to go get him. And long story short, he stayed home. He didn't even go to Wellington. He's totally fine. And everyone's like, oh no, did he get hurt? I'm like, no, I came home middle of the week because the kid's school. And I rode him, jumped him. He's totally fine. So hopefully he's pulled himself together and he wants to go to Ocala. But, you know, he kind of has his own mindset. And, you know, he is the prince and princess all put in one package. So, yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Our young ones jumped incredible, but our, you know, he just didn't feel like playing that time.
Stay tuned. We'll see if he makes it to Ocala.
Stay tuned if he comes to Ocala. We're not sure yet.
What about you, Ellie?
So I just wanted to talk about the rider and the horse of the year for 2025. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to be surprised, right, that Boyd Martin was named the International Equestrian of the Year. I feel like he was kind of on fire last year. He was all over the place and definitely put in the work for sure. And I'm a little, I'm not going to lie, a little biased because I love a good gray mare. So when I saw that Kent Farrington's Greya was International Horse of the Year, I was thrilled.
She deserved it. I mean, how many five-star wins did she win? She was, incredible.
She was untouchable. No one could beat her.
She was
nuts.
She was,
amazing.
Cool yeah.
She is an incredible mare. Like, I love watching her.
Yeah, she is pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, they all seem to make sense to me this year, too. It was a good year. It was cool to see Boyd be the FEI world number one in 2025. So, yeah, all of it was good, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Justine?
Okay, so Jess, you're probably aware of this since you guys have already been to Florida, but since our last episode in December to now, there's been a couple of EHV cases in Florida and then obviously around the country. It sort of started late last year when in the Western world, Ellie, I'm sure you're aware of this, like in Texas and Oklahoma, where there was like a big Western, maybe rodeo type event.
Yeah, rodeo.
Yeah, where it EHV1, the neurological strain just sort of spread like pretty fast across multiple states. Well, since then, there have been a couple of cases in Florida unrelated to that horse show, unrelated to the Western horse show. The first one popped up here, actually, in Tampa Bay at Tampa Bay Downs, our thoroughbred racehorse track, where a filly here, like I think like mid-December, tested positive and was showing neurological symptoms. And then another case was reported in Palm Beach County, so close to WEF, but at a private boarding facility. And, you know, several horses were exposed, but luckily in both cases, both facilities were cleared. Like they quarantined two barns.
They caught it early. Absolutely.
Yeah. They quarantined the two barns at the racetrack. They still let the horses work out during that time, but no other horses ever tested positive, which was great. Same in Palm Beach. So it's just a good reminder that, like, it's flu season, guys, just like us horses have a flu season, just to make sure you're taking precautions. Your horses are up to date on vaccines. You're being careful when traveling. There's been a lot of great information that came out from the University of Florida during that time frame. But, you know, there's always hysteria with stuff like this. It's just do your part to be safe. Just like we heard from our vet friends at Zoetis, the last couple of episodes where we talked about biosecurity measures at horse shows. But as of right now, there are no active cases in Florida and the show season never slowed down. Like people are still showing and horses have been able to safely compete. But yeah, it just felt like it was a big enough deal at the end of the year that we should mention it. Yeah. And we have a great story on the website at heelsdownmag.com that kind of shows like if you're worried about it, like what can you do? So we'll make sure that link is posted in the show notes. Okay, our last recap of 2025 is we talked about all of the amazing things we wanted from our gift guide, but I want to know, what did you guys actually get for Christmas that, like, you're really thrilled that you got? Whether it was a surprise or it was something on your list, what did you get? Horsey or non-horsey?
So I'll go first because I am truly obsessed. I am an organized person. I think I probably have more planners and calendars than everybody, but I always like, I had that one that goes on the fridge that you wrote on and I had to update it every week or every month. And then I never did it, to be honest, because I get busy. And so I was looking at that Skylight calendar and stuff. And so I did like the research. Well, I didn't love that it has like a subscription and I'm like, I don't want another subscription, to be honest. Like, I just want something that I can like find somewhere and the kids can do it. And I found this thing called the Kozla calendar, C-O-Z-Y-L-A. And it looks like the Skylight calendar, to be honest. And we ended up mounting it on the side of my fridge, which is like where next to my sink, basically, in my coffee maker. And it has tasks for the kids. So the kids will like check off and they get rewards. And like, I'm not going to kill it. Like our children's rewards are they get an extra math problem or they get an extra song at bedtime. Like they're not real rewards, but they just brush their teeth and they check it off. But what I love the most is it's got that my calendar synced right there, or I can do meals and I can go and actually like get the meals. I can sync what I need from the grocery store and it does all of that. And it's like touch screen. It's like, honestly, it looks like a big iPad, to be honest, but it like has all these different like kind of things and it's fun. Like my entire family loves it. Like Doug's all techie, but he doesn't really care about like that kind of stuff. But now the kids can see their, and it uploads right in their school calendar and they're like, oh, we have this today at school, or we need to remember library today and all of the above.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Okay. Right? I like something that syncs because that's my problem. You know what I mean? Like I write it down one place and then if it's not in all the devices,
Now it's in my phone, it's everywhere. And so I literally, it syncs. Like if I put it on my calendar on my phone, like my lessons, I know what lessons I have, the times, all of it. It's pretty amazing.
Wow. Okay, that's a pretty good one.
Does it sync to Doug's calendar too?
Well, so we use Calendoo, and so we have like 6 different calendars within the one.
Oh,
and so it syncs all of our calendars. So it's all kinds of crazy.
I was going to say, that's where Matt and I struggle is.
Yeah.
It'll sync to so-and-so's calendar and neither of us will have matching calendars.
Right.
What about you, Ellie? You get something good?
I did, actually. So Matt hit the nail on the head. He got me lots of different like movie theater, like size boxes of chocolates. I'm never going to turn those down. But my mom, I've been talking about wanting like a standing desk and like one of those like walking pads because it gets boring sitting in front of a computer all day. And I actually got, it's called the Pace Rocker. It's a like auto incline walking pad. And I mean, you can run on it. I don't do running. So I never use it at a speed fast enough to incline to run. But no, it's been really great to be like actually like moving on the days that like, you know, I'm not having to go out and do the stalls all day long because they're stuck inside. It's nice to just feel like I'm getting my steps in and then that's fun.
That's cool. That's a great gift.
Yeah. What about you?
Oh boy. Okay. For me, well, actually, I think mine was a Jess and Doug Payne recommendation. I got the horse link boots.
Oh yeah.
For Mikey, the TikTok viral boots for horses that offer the icing and the compression and the magnetic therapy. They're great. I'm like,
I was going to say, what do you think about them?
For like the price, I think they're like beyond any expectation I had. I was like, dang, these are pretty cool.
Same with us. I was like, wow, these are actually really nice.
So my husband, like, we'll give you guys like a peek behind the scenes. So, you know, Jess and Doug got these boots and were telling us about them. I'm like, man, I want these. So I sent them to my husband for like my Christmas gift. Like, hey, if you haven't bought me anything yet, I'm interested in these. And he ordered them, but like, they are made in China. That's just where they come from. And he paid and he was like, I got an email receipt that was like all written in Chinese lettering, you know.
He was nervous.
And he was like, I'm looking at the website and I could tell all the images are made from AI, like all the writer's hands are marbled. And you know what I mean? Like, he's like, I'm just worried that these aren't actually going to come.
And he had a full freak out.
He was panicking because he just assumed they weren't going to come by Christmas. So he told me. And so I was like, well, let me ask Justin Doug, who luckily were able to hunt down.
We like messaged on like TikTok and we're like, hey, we got these boots and all of this. Like, and our friend, like, is there anybody else? And then, but to be honest, then the first one we messaged like kind of went dark as well. And we're like, oh no, we all got scammed.
But they came. But
they did. And like, then we emailed and we figured it out. But like, I'm not going to lie. Like at the beginning, I was like, oh no. Yep. This is happening.
But yeah, no, don't worry. They arrived. They came. They got there. They look very professional, and like the packaging, the carrying case that they come in is awesome. I mean, I'm using them like almost daily and they're holding up just fine. So totally worth it.
Plan your 2026 competition schedule with one unmatched HITS experience across six premier venues, including HITS Ocala, HITS Del Mar, HITS Culpeper, HITS Chicago, HITS Hudson Valley, and HITS Vermont. Featuring seven total WCHR weeks, 10 total FEI jumping weeks, and opportunities for horses and riders of all levels from coast to coast, this action-packed year will be one to remember. Learn more at www.hitsshows.com.
All right, everybody. So our first guest tonight is Laura Ryman, who is probably a name that might sound familiar to you because Laura is a contributor at heelsdownmag.com. She's written a number of different things for us, some from her personal perspective as a rider and a horse owner, but then also as the owner of the Pilates Powerhouse. She is also an author of the Pilates for Horses book that we've reviewed at Heels Down. And she shared some of her Pilates tips in some of her articles she's written for us. And you can follow her for more tips. Her Instagram is Pilates for Horses. And she has a website, Pilates with the number 4horses.com. But recently, Laura wrote a piece for us towards the end of last year about her personal horse. She had a thoroughbred gelding who, like many horses, had kissing spines. And she detailed her experience going through the diagnosis of kissing spines, but then also trying to support her horse and still have some athletic goals with him. And it was really an eye-opening piece for me when I read it, just because I think so many of us have gone through things with horses where there's never an easy answer or an easy diagnosis, right? And you just want to do right by your friend, your horse. And I really commend Laura for taking the time to write something so vulnerable that didn't have the outcome we all hoped for. So Laura, thank you so much for being here and thanks for being willing to talk about a tough topic with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start with that piece that you wrote, which we'll absolutely link in the show notes, but you were very, there's more to say than just vulnerable, but you were very open with what you went through with your thoroughbred, with his kissing spines. And I really commend you for opening up in this way. But what made you want to share this story? Because it's very personal too. And I'm just curious, because it's a brave thing that you did.
Yeah. So obviously super traumatic situation for me. That was a years long situation. And I will say, like, I scroll Facebook all the time and I see people getting absolutely eviscerated when they're looking to rehome a horse that just has problems that they either can't diagnose or can't, you know, afford to support. And I feel like we have these barn families that are kind of insular, right? Like, not in a negative way, but like you share the same vets, you share the same trainers, you mm-hmm. share the same barriers. So you kind of have like a similar point of view on things. And the beauty of social media and Heels Down Mag is like you can get a broader view. And I think like sharing our experiences helps other people who are maybe going through it and having a really tough time and don't really know where to turn or what to do, beating themselves up, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. The internet can be a really scary place to share something with that. And we try to be in our own bubble here at Heels Down to share those types of experiences where people can have constructive conversations without being dragged, right? You know, and I hope that was your experience, but you know, the spoiler alert in this conversation. So you guys go and read Laura's story on the website. Is your horse's journey ended in euthanasia? Obviously, you did not come to that decision lightly, but it's something I don't think we talk about enough as a community, that ending pain like that is still a kindness. Can you talk about how you came to that decision?
Yeah, so I could be so verbose about this, but basically the first barn that I had him at where he started to just not be right, the trainer yelled at me and told me I was being abusive for keeping him alive. Now, at that point, the vet said, I think he'll fully recover. That was kind of we were dealing with potentially kissing spine, potentially some EPM stuff. So, they kind of have similar presentations sometimes. So it was really hard to figure out what was going on. I moved him to another barn, and the parting words of that trainer was, do not call the vet. If you have a problem, it is behavioral. He really felt like it was a training situation. Now, that is coming from a trainer who, my horse had 104 degree temperature and he didn't even text me. So there's that. And then I got to a barn where I will say it was a very upscale barn where the clientele was, had a lot more disposable income. Sports medicine vets were out every single day. I really got in the weeds with doing shockwave, doing a million steroid injections, doing PRP, doing all sorts of supplements, blankets, all the things. And then I had made a promise to myself and my horse. I would do everything that I could to help him. This was like 4 or 5 years in the making. We're talking, I drained my savings account. We're talking 85 grand, like easy.
Sure. Yeah.
Neurological vets, I happen to live in area 2, right? So I have access to some of the best of the best. And I knew every time I got on my horse that I was making a conscious decision that there was a danger to it. He was really spicy and explosive and also sometimes didn't seem to know where his feet were. And then there was one day I had a great ride, and on the way back to the barn, he reared up. And I had this moment in my head where I was like, well, sometimes he doesn't know where his feet are. Is he going to come back on me? And then I obviously got tumbled off the back, and he just stood there bucking, just nothing but bucking. And I said, okay, we got some problems. And my trainer said, well, I don't feel comfortable riding him if he's not aced. Okay. So that's red flag one. I thought, all right, well, maybe I'll send him to boot camp with some like very upper level eventer that has no fear. Mm-hmm. But when I kind of was sorting that out, I sent her some video and she said, he looks a little lame. And at that point I had injected like every joint. We're dealing with, pull, we're dealing with SI, we're dealing with back. And I just kind of reached the end where I felt like I could not do, no matter what I did, it was not, things were going south. And I would have like, a couple beautiful months where it was like all worth it and just joy. I feel like I got caretaker burnout a little bit. I just had like everything was about this horse. And I talked to my sports medicine vet and she was like, you have done everything that you can for him. And my trainer said, well, sell him to somebody who could just do low level stuff. You're not pushing him. His body's not going to break. See, he's not a low level horse. He's very spicy. Mm-hmm. What can you do with a off the track thoroughbred that, really he should just be like, plodding around the ring, but he doesn't have the personality for that. What about retiring him? Well, sure. But, I have corrective shoes on him. He gets, crazy fevers practically once a season. I had him on all sorts of supplements. He was young, athletic. And again, like it would be sometimes like flying a kite, just trying to walk him out to the field, like spicy. So I did what I really felt like it was the only option I had, I felt. So that's how I came to that decision.
I mean, it really does sound like you went down the list of trying everything to help him.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there I kept a really comprehensive list of the things that I did and I pulled it out. And my God, the things that I did, it was overkill maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely like a lot of emotions to those decisions, and especially in yours. But now that you've had like some time, can you tell us like what you learned through the experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first step was I contacted every single vet school seeing if I could donate his body to study. I thought this would be great because I'll get a post-mortem on him, and, you know, his putting him down would be, you know, it would help somebody. Well, guess what? Nobody wants a thoroughbred because there are a lot of them with back issues. And also, just for everybody's knowledge, if you donate your horse to a school, you don't really get a say as to when they put them down. So they might keep them there for a while, just taking blood and doing tests and things like that. And that is an important part of, you know, studying and learning. Not for me.
You felt you had already done that enough for your horse. Right. Like, yeah, it was time for him to move past that part.
Yeah. That was not kind of a road that I wanted to go down. I did pay for a postmortem, and my sports medicine vet, who I love dearly, said, hey, look, nothing's going to show up on it. So often people are looking for answers and they don't get it, and I don't want you to be hurt. It was expensive. Nothing, and I mean nothing, popped up. I had been treating SI arthritis, did not show up. I had been treating the pole for like a bone chip in the pole. That did not pop. Kissing spine did not pop. It did pop in the bone scan that I had years prior. Nothing, not one thing showed up. So that was really hard for me. I was a little bit prepared, but extremely upset and disappointed. Would I do things differently? I probably would have tried to throw him out in a field for a year. But, you know, when you look back on these things, you, for your own sanity sometimes.
Hindsight's 20/20, 100%.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda will ruin you.
Yeah.
For sure.
So in your piece for Heels Down, you connected to your own injury experience with like what your horse went through. Can you talk us through that? Like, how have your own experiences with doctors changed like the way that you thought about the diagnosis process with your horse?
Yeah. So this to me is the craziest thing, because I've had herniated discs for a really long time, and I am strong and I am in shape. And so I was just, you know, once a year, maybe twice a year, I would be out for a week and then back at it. You know, one time I was doing a Boyd Martin clinic and I had screwed my back up so badly, and I got chucked in the dirt and warm up, and I swear to God, it fixed my back.
Oh my gosh.
That's your own chiropractic. That's a chiropractic treatment. Exactly. Chiropractic treatment of the ground.
Yeah, truly. It like threw something right back in, and I was like, okay. So I think after I lost Mark, I got another horse, and it just was not, it was a trauma response, right? Like, I was not ready. So I am not currently riding. I picked up golf and I was just trying to fill the void, and I screwed my back up so badly, and I was like ignoring it basically. And one day I woke up, I had lost full movement in my foot. I had like full foot drop. I went to a spine surgeon and he said, you need immediate surgery for this. The herniated discs are pressing on the nerve, and if you don't get relief of the nerve, you might never be able to flex your foot again. And I said, okay, I don't love that. I went to another spine surgeon. He said the same thing. I'm sure we have all heard, like, don't get back surgery. You know, I went to two neurosurgeons, both of them way calmer than the spine surgeons. And they were like, nerves take time to heal. Give it time. Give it a couple months, you're going to be okay. I went to three osteopaths. Two of them are really pushing PRP, which I have scheduled. But, you know, the interesting thing with the healthcare system is if you schedule things really far out, it might just resolve itself by the time you have surgeries. I did have an epidural steroid injection. This whole time I was doing physical therapy, going to acupuncture once a week, going to chiropractor, kind of all the things I was doing for the horse. I bought this like red light therapy mat. And what I'm discovering is like the body takes time to heal. And my brain is almost rewired. Like, I'm scared to bend. I'm scared to pick things up. I'm scared to activate my back. The things that are really soothing and calming for my body are actually like things that are touching the nervous system, like the sauna. I've been walking in the water, not even swimming. And I just think that my body has been rewired to be afraid of movement, which I had heard about my horse. And I just was kind of like, yeah, well, what can I do here? Like I worked with some cowboys and stuff like that to try and dig deeper into the emotional state or like the feeling of, you know, those pain triggers. But I think at the end of the day, what I'm learning is like for me, time and just I'm doing everything I can to avoid surgery. I did that for the horse too, but the horse couldn't talk to me. And it's so hard. Like I'm trying to meditate. You know, maybe if I had spent a little bit more time letting him just be in a field, stripped down, you know, less is more. Again, the coulda, woulda, shouldas, the maybes. I'm kind of in a situation right now where I'm scheduled for this PRP in like 2 or 3 weeks. And the doctors are now saying, well, hindsight 2020, it's a good thing you didn't have surgery because you're actually doing well. And so it wouldn't have been a good thing to do. And I actually wouldn't stick a needle in your spine now because leave well enough alone. I'm like, okay, well.
Yeah.
What?
It's funny. It's funny how time does take a lot to heal. I mean, everybody wants the quick fix and everything else. And I think, you know, just, you know, I think maybe you didn't get the answer with the horse, with everything else, but maybe he is helping you in this way. You know what I mean? And that's kind of a cool kind of analogy that like, he's kind of figuring out, like, what else would you tell others that you kind of felt like, is there anything, you know, as like a closing thing, like what would you tell somebody besides time that you learn between your own process and the horse? Like, what did you kind of learn from that?
You know, I would tell people it's okay. It's okay to choose euthanasia. It's okay to say,
yeah,
this is where it ends. You know, what I didn't want to do was pass the horse on, wash my hands, you know, okay, that was fun, but I can't do it anymore. You know, putting an animal down is extremely emotionally challenging for you. It's, you know, the animal probably is not, it's not painful.
It's not painful for them. It's painful for us.
Yeah. Like the day that I had scheduled the euthanasia, I had spent so much time working with my horse to trailer load. I had done so many clinics and spent so much time. And every time I tried to get him to go to a show, you know, he walked right on that trailer. Like, no,
they know.
So trusting. And I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. Right now? No, it was time, you know, and it's a hard decision. And it is one of the hardest decisions, you know, when you have to put any kind of animal down. But at the end of the day, when you've made that choice over and over again, like that last time, it is probably the right decision.
Yeah, for sure. So like, I don't have advice for people because I almost feel like there were things going on with my horse that we could not fix no matter how hard we tried. So I try not to beat myself up. I have days where I'm like,
oh, no, don't, you shouldn't. Absolutely not.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you wish they could tell us, right? Cause that's, that is the most relatable part, Laura, I think, in everything that you've shared, both what you've written and what you've told us here today is just, there are so many times it doesn't matter what horse you own or where you are and you're riding. Like we all have those moments where we're like, something's wrong, but I can't figure it out. And it,
yeah.
And that is it's the most heart-wrenching part, I feel like, of horse ownership is just like, you want to do the right thing, but it's 15 people will give you 15 different answers on what that right thing should be. And probably none of them are right. You have to trust your gut. Right. And I think that's what you did. You know, you knew him, you knew him best.
It's even now with my issues, every single doctor, even the ones that want to do surgery, they want to do different types of surgery.
I'm right. Like,
can we not have some sort of standard of care here?
Right.
So, yeah. And, you know, I will say I've reached out to a lot of the horse community and we all got back problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Everyone. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Yep.
Take care of that spine, ladies. Yeah.
So, Laura, beyond being a horse owner and riding, you know, you are also your own body worker. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet if they want to learn more about what you do or find your book?
Absolutely. So you can find Pilates for Horses. You can buy it on Amazon. And you can always reach out to me. A lot of people actually have emailed me questions, and I'm always happy to answer at info@thepilatespowerhouse.com. And if you're in the Northern Virginia region, I have a studio in Alexandria, Virginia, and this is horse country. So
I love it. Well, hopefully you'll see more bylines from Laura at hillsdownmag.com. But Laura, thank you so much for sharing your story and spending a few minutes with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to share the story.
No slipping, no sliding, no problem. EcoGold's secure saddle pads are engineered to keep the horse's back comfortable while keeping the saddle in place for a safe, competitive ride. They have impact protection through the seat and ultra-thin flaps that provide the rider with better communication and a more stable riding position. Available in both English and Western styles. Shop the entire collection at ecogold.ca.
All right, so it's time to introduce our next guest, who I'm so excited is here with us this year. Chloe Reed is the co-president of Live Oak International, which is one of my absolute favorite horse shows of the year. As co-president, Chloe is in charge of shaping the tournament's future by stepping in to lead the sponsorship strategy and partnerships. Chloe grew up immersed in the family's tradition of running this really unique horse show. And as an accomplished international show jumper, she brings a unique perspective of an athlete who also serves as an organizer. Hi, Chloe. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
Good. Thank you guys for having me.
So I'm so excited. Whenever like the new year kicks off, Live Oak is always like one of the first horse shows I put on my calendar to go to as a spectator. I live here locally in Florida. Live Oak Stud is just such a beautiful place to put on a horse show. And I know this year is the 35th edition of Live Oak International, which is so cool that it's been going on for this long. But I was wondering if you could tell us, Chloe, a little bit more about what this event means to you personally.
Yeah, it's really it's a full year-on project for my family and I, and it's something that it's honestly so fun and we're so fortunate that I get to do this with my family and host it at my grandmother's property in Ocala, Florida. And I get to live on the farm the majority of the year, and I'm so fortunate to live there. It's, like you said, it's really spectacular. It's gorgeous. And this horse show is kind of the opportunity for us to open our gates once a year and show everyone that beauty. And it's also just the pet project of Chester and I, my uncle, and because we co-president and run the show together, and we both travel internationally all year round and get to go to some amazing competitions. And this is our chance to kind of invite all of our friends and competitors and sponsors and family members to the show and host our own horse show that we're really proud of.
So Live Oak, it is an amazing venue. I was lucky enough, I went and watched as a spectator. It did rain pretty bad. I think it was last year or the year before, but it was still amazing. It was great. We were under the tents, so that was nice. But it's part of your family, like you said, your grandmother's property. Tell us a little bit, like, how did it start? Like, what's the history behind the event? Like, how did you guys and your uncle decide you guys were going to create this event?
Yeah, so the first couple of years, actually, the show started in 91, and it was held off property for the first, for the dressage and cones phase of the driving. And the facility.
Where was it held? Was it like not
another
far
horse
off?
Park in Ocala, not very far away. And, but cool. They needed the landscape actually for the marathon phase, because that requires a couple acres of land for the marathon phase of the driving. So they reached out to my grandmother and asked if they could borrow some land for the horse show. And she of course agreed to it. And then when Chester graduated Cornell University a few years later, he was driving a pair horses with Jimmy Fairclough. And then he decided to take a bigger role in the competition. And that's when it moved all the phases to Live Oak. And it's kind of just grown since then. I think it's 17 or 16 years ago, I was actually visiting the show just to watch Chester and support the family. I was in high school and it was just a driving show. And I looked at my mom and I said, why do we have this beautiful horse show, this beautiful grass ring, but why can't we jump on it? Like, what's wrong in this picture? Why can't we do what I love of jumping?
That's amazing.
Chester, I always say he's a big picture guy, and you give him a little inch, and he just grew with it. And he was like, absolutely, you're right. Like, why aren't we doing that? So we both, my mom at the time was running or helping run the Washington International Horse Show in DC. And she had done that for a few years. So she kind of had a little bit of horse show background for show jumping. And she came on board with my uncle and added the jumping portion to the driving. And we started just a small two-star. And I think after only a year or two, we were quickly a two-star World Cup, three-star World Cup, four-star World Cup. And just it keeps growing, and we keep adding disciplines and exciting features every year.
Sorry. So what's your favorite part of the event? Like, do you have any special memories that you share? Like, you've talked about how it like grew, but now you ride there and you've shown there, and Chester's obviously showing as well. Like, do you have a specific memory or, you know, favorite part? Because you pass by it in the middle of like just a normal day, like not during the year, that like it's just a big field, but you guys transform it into such a spectacular place. That what's your kind of favorite part about it?
Yeah. So like you said, the facility, the showgrounds itself is actually a cow field for 350 days of the year. And we take it for 2 weeks and turn it into a world-class stage, which is, it's incredible. And I have friends and sponsors who come out actually in the summer, and they're like, yeah, we'd love to go see the venue. I'm like, we can go out there, but there's nothing to see. And that's, always
it doesn't
really
look like what you look like that 1 week or two weeks or however long it is.
The grass is as tall as I am, and there's cows out there, and it's just not what it looks like. But that was always very important to my grandmother, that the land can return to nature and can return to a farmland and continue to be that after the event. So we do a really good job of making sure it's clean afterwards and everything returns exactly how it needs to be. But to answer your other question, I think for me, Live Oak is, it's this weird adrenaline rush of a week, to be honest. Like, you don't sleep. I'm running around. I feel like crazy. And I love the event planning side of it, but obviously also the show jumping and being able to compete side of it. So it just kind of brings both my interests of the event planning and the management and showing all together in one. And it's this weird high, and I finish on Monday and I'm exhausted, but I want to keep doing it again. But it's really fun.
So I actually wanted to ask you more about that, because as, you know, an accomplished show jumper in your own right, and, you know, with the combined driving, you know, obviously those are kind of different fans. I mean, I drive as well, so I've been in both worlds, and I love that this combines the two. How did you kind of move into a more leading role in the event over the years, and how do you juggle that, like, show jumper versus combined driving and getting them all together?
Yeah, I think we're fortunate that we're based in Ocala, and I think Ocala has such unique, diverse background to it. I mean, there's obviously a lot of thoroughbred people there. There's show jumpers now, the driving people, dressage, eventing, just so many different disciplines living in Ocala. And that's one of the reasons I love living there. I feel like you go to dinner and you'll run into someone from a different discipline, or the tack store selling tack for a whole different discipline, but you can kind of pick up on different pieces and bring it to your own. And I think that's one thing that really helps us succeed with Live Oak there, is because we are accepted by all these different disciplines. But yeah, I think just getting, honestly, it's really, I think even the drivers enjoy watching the show jumping at Live Oak, and it's a really fun chance for the show jumpers to be able to go watch the drivers. So we're fortunate that everyone gets along, but yeah, at the end of the day, they're all horse people, and they're there to have a good time and have good sport. So it makes it easy.
Yeah, I think you really hit the nail on the head there with that, Chloe, because it's like when I go there, I run into people I haven't seen, and you know what I mean? And like, but there are horse people, and we all come from different kind of walks of the world, but we're there to celebrate the horses, right? And you guys, you do such an incredible job at Live Oak in that, like, it is the, I swear this when I say this, that it's the most fun to go as a spectator. It's like better than doing like a Saturday Night Lights anywhere else. It's just so much fun. And the spectator experience is really cool. Like, there's always the fun gala party. The tent experience is amazing. You really don't want to miss marathon day for the combined driving. It's just, there's so much to do. There's great food. Can you talk about the prep that goes into that to make it a really fun spectator experience, which to be honest, isn't really like at the forefront of a lot of horse shows, you know, so that's what makes Live Oak so cool for me. Like, I could bring my husband, who's not a horse guy, and he could have just as much fun hanging out there all day. You know, there's so much to do.
And that's honestly my goal. Like, for me, I'm like, I want to have a great spectator event, and I want the husband who knows nothing about horses to be sitting in our beer garden and watching their kid in the sand pit with in the kid zone and enjoying a nice beverage or drink and shopping and looking at a cars or and whatever it is. And then, oh, look, there's a horse. And just, I want to bring all these people around that maybe aren't there necessarily for the horses, but then get to learn and enjoy the horse sport as it is. And I always joke that planning this horse show is like putting on a 4-day wedding, because there's people, I think, don't think about all of the food that we have to put together. If it's, we have Wednesday night and Thursday night parties for all of our competitors and grooms and their teams for, I think it's like 200 people each of those nights. We have Friday night, a dinner for our sponsors. It's Saturday night, like you mentioned, is our big costume party. So just every day there's the VIPs holding 400 people. So there's a lot of moving pieces. And I think on Saturday I counted, we have like 15 open bars running at one time. Like it's absolutely insane. But I think that's what really separates Live Oak from other shows, is the attention to detail that goes into making it so spectator friendly as well as competitor friendly. Cause that's, at the end of the day, having those spectators there is going to make it fun for the competitors to compete. So got to make it good for everyone.
No, you guys do an amazing job. Like, everybody was still having fun the time that I was there. And I think it was last year, the year before, time loses it and stuff.
I was having a meltdown.
I'm sure you were having a complete meltdown. But my husband was supposed to ride, actually. And then the five-star horse got hurt or whatever. And so, long story short, people were like, come to the tent. You still have to come see everything else. So we went with some of our best friends. And I was like, it was, I'm sure, having a meltdown. But everybody in the tent, like all of the sponsors, like, or the staff and everybody, was like making sure everybody was taken care of. Like, you guys do not miss a beat. And it was, you guys put on a performance. Like, all the kids were playing in the rain. And I was like, I'm sure it's been a lot, but you guys did an amazing job. And you talk about how you compete.
Like, that moment's going on and where I'm freaking out. I was supposed to be going too. And I just, it was a lot going on. And I looked at Chester and I said, just open the VIP tent, let anyone in, just give them food, give them beverages, just keep them happy. And
oh my God. That's so funny. We ended up piecing. There was a, like, there was a, before they, you guys had called or whatever else, there was like a dry spot and it was like, okay, we're going to make a run for it back to our car. Yeah. So we left early, but you guys did such an amazing job. Like, we were there for the beginning of it to watch and everything. And so just the amount of detail you guys go into it is very noticed by everybody. And I can't imagine, you said you were going to compete. Do you plan to compete again this year?
I do. I've only missed 1 year of competing, and it was like a last minute thing. It just got very overwhelming for me and my horses weren't in the best condition. And I just kind of looked at my mom and I was like, I can't do this. So we decided to withdraw. But then after that year, my mom looked at me, she's like, why do we put so much effort in this if you're not actually going to show?
You're not going to go. Yeah. You've got to have some fun. You got to have fun at your own horse show.
And it's funny, I honestly normally do actually pretty well there. And I think it's because I have so much else going on that I don't have time to think about being nervous or overthinking my ride. I just have to, I have to go. And I'm fortunate, one of my really good friends in Ocala, she kind of becomes my sidekick the week of Live Oak. I mean, she's always sidekick, but like extra that week. And last year I'm getting on my horse, I'm going in the ring and I'm like about to walk in. I look at her, I'm like, does the VIP tent have sparkling water? And I'm like, that's what I'm worried about. And she's like, can you please focus on like going in the
ring?
Can
you please not remember to go to 7 to 8 in this many strides? Like, that's what you need to think of.
Pay attention and not be worrying if people have water. But yeah, that's, I think it honestly helps my riding at Live Oak, because I have, there's a lot of other thoughts in my head going on.
So which horses will you aim to take to Live Oak?
It's a really good question. I have a really cool string of horses right now. So I think it's still a few weeks away. So we'll see where they all are. But I think right now I'll aim to have my good steady one, Crossover, who I've had, I think, 6 or 7 years now.
So he is amazing, I have to say. Yes. I personally, like, I love him. He is so cool to, you guys, you're such a pair. You are so fun to watch. I have to be honest.
He's a funny guy. He's got a lot of attitude.
The best ones.
I think I definitely take him. I think probably my other good mare, Chelsea, who's my little speed demon, because we have a couple speed classes, which are fun at Live Oak. So to get her in there. And then the one star division is really fun because it's a meter 30, meter 35, and designed kind of for that young rider, younger horse, giving them that experience to get in a massive international stage and give them that experience without being a massive Grand Prix right away.
Well, and I love that you guys do that because not many times can you put the green ones on the grass as well. It's like the ones that put it under the lights. It's like the same thing. Like putting on the grass and early on is so fun.
Yeah, and we kind of model it after European shows, honestly, where you get to go to Aachen or these big shows, they always have a young horse division and getting that horse, that experience. So, and I think also in America, there's a lot of young riders. So to get them the opportunity to go in the arena, it's in the main ring. You're not going in the back ring. You're going to go in the main ring at a prime time with all the spectators watching you. And I think that's valuable knowledge that you can't read in a book. You can't practice at home. You got to go do it yourself.
So as a big time watcher of Grand Prix, I really get excited with Live Oak because you have the show jumpers on the grass, which I think has kind of faded away from a lot of other facilities, which I think is really part of the charm. So I'm curious, do you have a preference on jumping on grass versus footing that we see at the other venues?
I love a big grass ring, truthfully. I honestly, at home in Ocala, I don't have a sand ring. I ride every day on grass, and I think it's really good for the horses to have a change of scenery and to not always be on the same maybe fiber footing. And I love the rhythm you can get on a grass field. I feel like they're typically bigger in size. You can go more. I like to ride off my natural eye and not be so stuck all the time to a distance and a line. So I find it suits my style of riding really well. And I think my horses also enjoy that too.
Yeah. I love riding on grass, but being an eventer, we love to be out on the cross country in the field. So I get it. But Chloe, it's been so wonderful to have you on. So for listeners who want to learn more about Live Oak, like if they're interested in looking for tickets to come as a spectator or learn more about the schedule, can you give us some more information about where people can find all of that info?
Sure. All of our tickets are available on our website, liveoakinternational.com. And kids are free. We have general admission tickets. We have tailgate opportunities available for Saturday during the marathon, which are super cool. And we have VIP hospitality still available. And you can buy a single day ticket on the weekend or a whole weekend pass for you and friends. So it's really designed for the person to create their best package. And yeah, you can find that all on our website.
Okay, sounds great, which we'll absolutely link to in our show notes today. But Chloe, thanks so much for joining us. It's been great chatting with you.
Of course. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing you guys at Live Oak.
Following record-breaking crowds in 2025, the nation's only tournament to showcase both international combined driving and show jumping competition on the same stage takes place at Live Oak Stud from March 12th to 15th, 2026. You won't want to miss the thrills of combined driving marathon and show jumping Grand Prix. Tickets, tailgating, and VIP tables are still available, and for more information are available at liveoakinternational.com. You won't want to miss out. So guys, it's that time. Rose and Thorn, who wants to go first?
Ooh, not me.
Okay.
I can bite the bullet here.
Okay, go. Let's go.
I'm going to start with my rose because my thorn is a doozy.
Oh, gosh.
So I have the worst luck, guys, but we'll get into that. So my rose is that Braves finished with her radiation treatment.
Yay.
Her brain tumor. And kid you not, it took 3 years off of her. Like she is back to like running around. She's back to like being upset
when I don't take her out. Oh, it took 3 years off. Oh, like it didn't add. Oh, like she's looking good.
Yeah.
Oh, I took it the same. Okay. Oh my gosh.
For a second, 3 years. Yeah.
I was like, oh no. And then I was like, oh no, that's not what she meant. Sorry. Totally misunderstood. That's amazing.
No. Yeah. Like she's got way more energy again, which are all positive signs. She'll still have to get a repeat MRI.
Yeah.
In probably like May-ish. Because it was a slow growing tumor, so it'll be slow to go away. But what the oncologist said is basically all of the radiation got rid of the like inflammation around the tumor. So it's like just it's really exciting to see like such a drastic change. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Awesome.
I'm happy for you, Ellie.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my time at Cornell was not
ended. It never ends. It never ends for you.
No.
I need a frequent flyer card.
Did they? I think they should get her a suite, like a hotel room suite somewhere next door with her name on it. And then maybe even a stall with her name on it.
I told them, I was like, you know, I think I should get frequent flyer points.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. So it was a really weird thing. So right before Christmas, Batman started having like just weird, like all of a sudden I went out and he like hadn't touched his hay, like was still in flake form. And no. I was like, this is really weird. And he was holding his head like slightly to the left and like not wanting to eat treats. And I was like, what is going on? So I called my vet because we were thinking, oh, maybe he broke a tooth or something, right? Like,
yeah, we talked about it. I remember you sent me videos and okay.
Yeah. Because I was like, what? Why is this? What's happening? So my vet came out and nothing wrong in his mouth, but he had a high SAA. It was in like the 500s.
Oh.
So he was like, this is weird. So we ran PCRs for, you know, Potomac, anaplaz, and like coronavirus, and came back negative on all those things. But we were like, okay, maybe we ran the PCR too fast. Maybe it is coronavirus and the appetite will come back. But he still like wasn't touching his hay. He wasn't cribbing right. Like, you know, it's bad when you have a cribber and you're like, it just doesn't sound right. Like, yeah, he's not getting a full crib in.
Yeah.
I'm like, that crib sounds really weak. I mean, like, you know. And so, and then like Christmas Eve, it just like, he kind of was like on an upswing and then he got worse. And I was like, we did antibiotics and he was on doxy. And then we got the negative PCRs. We stopped and we're like, okay, just like kind of let it run its course. But it got worse. And I was like, okay, I'm bringing him to Cornell. Like, screw this. So I brought him up on Christmas Eve and they did like an internal medicine eval and did, you know, like a full neuro workup. And they diagnosed him. They did a scope and they diagnosed him with THO, which is basically like arthritis in like the, you know, the hyoid bones. And they were saying, oh, he probably needs a CT because he might need the surgery where they disconnect basically the tongue from the hyoid bones. So basically it's not causing like a pain every time he eats. Okay. I'm like, okay, makes sense to me. He's got arthritis everywhere else. Of course he would have it in his jaw, right? So I'm like, okay, fine. We go up and we do the CT. So I truck him up to Saratoga for the Rudin Riddle because that's the only place with a head CT near me. And luckily it was standing, so it was easy. But they come out and they tell me right after and they're like, well, it looks like he has bone infection. So,
oh my goodness,
take him back to Cornell. And I'm like, okay. So I'm literally calling Cornell as I'm driving back and they get him in and they're like, oh no, it looks like, you know, definitely THO, but we'll have like our image specialists look at it. Not just THO. He has a bone infection and then also like an inner ear infection. And he had a joint infection in his TMJ. So I had like serious PTSD, I'm not going to lie, from the Flint situation. And I'm like, okay, so they were doing the emergency, you know, surgery with the joint flushing. And I'm like, I'm freaking out. I left him up at Cornell for 2 weeks because I was like, look, I can't have this not work again. Like, I don't think I'm like emotionally prepared for this. I felt that when we were speaking to Laura earlier, I was like, oh God, you know, but so he did that. And so now luckily we've got the joint under control and he's eating, but because it's a bone infection, right? We've got to keep him on doxy for basically 2 months.
Wow.
Because it's going to be slow to heal. So he's eating better and he's home and like he seems like a lot happier, you know, for sure. But, and he'll get, you know, blood work in 2 weeks and then he gets a ultrasound in 4 weeks and then he gets another CT in 6 weeks. So basically, I don't know what money is coming from where at this point.
Oh, no.
But yeah, and basically it's just another mystery case. He had no wound at all. So they're thinking it probably stemmed from like a chronic ear infection that he just wasn't showing signs of until it had already affected the bone and the joint.
Oh my gosh.
That's a stoic boy. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. And also, you know, it's bad when you bring in Batman into Cornell and people you've never seen before are like, oh, hi, Batman.
Oh, like, no, oh. He's famous.
Like the people that work there all know Batman. And it was his birthday when he was up there. And so they sent me pictures. They celebrated his birthday.
Oh, my God.
Because he turned 19. So, yeah. So I'm optimistic. Like, he's not out of the woods. You know, and I can't think about it in like a, you know, what could be situation. So I'm just trucking along and I'm happy that he's comfortable. You know, that's most important. He hates me because I have to syringe doxy into him twice a day. But yeah. So and after this, I'm really good if I could stop being at Cornell for a while.
Yeah, I think you should have used up all of your like bad juju, Ellie, because this is crazy how many that you had there. But I mean, I'm happy he's home. Clearly they wouldn't have let him go home if they didn't think like, you know, you could manage the protocols. At this point, I feel like you are a vet, like you've been through the Cornell vet school, you know, so fingers crossed that he, you know, this is all easy, smooth sailing for you now, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
So and his vet actually said that to me, Justine. She was like, wow, you ask such great questions. You should be a vet. I'm like,
oh,
yeah,
my
no,
goodness.
I don't be
please,
a vet,
no.
Actually.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to see a vet. I don't want to talk to a vet. I'm like,
yeah, right.
I'm done with vets. So, yeah.
Ugh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So starting the new year with a whopper.
Right.
What about you, Jess?
So we talked a little bit about, I'll do my thorn first, about Quincy. He was more annoying than a thorn, but he seems to be my thorn literally all the time sometimes. So just kind of over that. So thankfully, I'm just going to not make that my full thorn. But I'm hoping this weather doesn't become my thorn, that I don't have too many missed days of riding. So we've been out of commission for a couple days because of the snow, but we drug the ring, plowed the ring, and I'm hoping tomorrow afternoon our fields will be rideable. So I'm hoping that's not my thorn. So I kind of have like a weird kind of combined sort of situation because this weather, it's been brutal. I mean, we were down to 10 degrees. Like, we don't normally get that.
Yeah, that's so, like your lifestyle, Ellie. The rest of us are not used to that.
And then, but poor Ellie, if that's our like normal, not our lifestyle and Ellie's lifestyle, poor Ellie's like doing new extremes. So, I mean, that's why I don't really want to make it my thorn because Ellie's like, my highs are single digits. I'm like, oh, probably shouldn't make that my thorn because that was my lows. Like, we're still seeing 30s. So I'm hoping we're like in the clear. But then the Rose, we had such a fun Christmas. We went to Nashville to see my family for Hudson's birthday. And then we were in Florida for Abigail's. So, you know, my poor children have their birthdays the 24th of December and the 3rd of January. So that probably should have been my thorn, is that those poor kids have, you know, those birthdays, but they make the most of it. And we had so much fun. But on another note, like more recent, like this week recent, we've been waiting, what, it was middle of summer to see even glimpses of that 12 plus hour photo shoot we did at the farm that I don't even know if that was a rose or thorn for a zoitis because it was so long. But the first sort of commercial to come out in the preview, it looks so good. So that's got to be like probably my rose is they sent it to us. I think Justine will have to link it into the notes, but I think we just posted it that the commercials are looking so cool. Like,
yeah,
all of the time that it took, you know, and it was a full, you know, 12, 14 hour day. They did such a good job with production.
They're beautiful.
So I'm excited.
Yeah, they're really top notch. I'm like, get chills watching them sometimes. I'm like really
It's
impressed.
So cool. And the way my rose is that like, we didn't see the western side. So we were the English barn that was shot. And then the western barn was shot not far from here. And the way that they incorporated the two was amazing. And so I can't wait for their future stuff that they're going to put out. Like that was super cool when we finally saw it. So that was my rose, is that, you know, all the work and stuff went in and it, you know, the team they put in was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. Justine, you figured out yours?
Okay. My time.
It's your time.
Okay. I can't remember. I might have shared this in December, so yell at me if I did. But a good horse girl friend of mine, her name is Whitney, is getting married. We're going to her wedding in a couple weeks. But I went on her bachelorette party right before Christmas, and it was like the most epic horse girl bachelorette party ever. In that,
what'd you do?
We all bussed to Orlando to go to medieval times, and it was epic.
How's that horse girl?
Because we're watching a bunch of funny people dressed as knights on horses.
Okay.
it was medieval horse girl chic.
I know. I'm like, oh my god. Chill. I was oh my gosh, I don't know what's happening.
It's so funny. So when she
I was like, is that a horse?
I felt old in that statement right there. I'm like, what's happening? Why is it horsey?
When she invited me, I'm like, yeah, I'm down. And then, so a bunch of them, like a bunch of her friends, like they all went to Orlando and did a weekend, and I just couldn't do it. So another, you know, like friend from the barn and I drove over for the day, and we got there and we met like the bigger group of girls for, you know, the medieval times dinner. And they all dressed up like medieval times, like,
well,
you know, like
what I would have thought is the thorn.
Like queen dresses, medieval dresses and stuff. And we did not.
Like, where do they get those?
I know, but it was super fun. We had a blast. It was just such a silly thing to do and very like Florida thing to do. But it was really fun. And to be honest, they take medieval times, credit to you, they take good care of the horses. They all looked good, you know? So okay. You're kind of never sure when you show up to things like that.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I don't know. But they all look good. And they had like a segment in the middle of it on, you know, like a guy on a Lusitano, like doing like, you know, some like upper level dressage movements in a very poor way. But the horse knew what it was doing.
That's okay. That's still fun.
And they had a good open bar. We had a good time, you know? Huh?
Did they joust?
Yeah, they absolutely joust.
And I feel like that's like the number one thing they have to do. That's the only thing I think I'd know what they do.
Absolutely. They joust, and then like you sit in a color-coded section in the theater. So like you're assigned a knight, you know? So,
yeah.
And luckily,
so you cheer on a person.
Yes.
Did yours win?
Yes, he did. And he was the hottest one out of all the knights. He was actually like a young, good-looking guy.
Perfect for a bachelorette party.
And he, like, they throw roses into the crowd, and they threw it right to Whitney. It was perfect. They were great. We had a great time.
Was it planned?
I don't know. We were just very loud and had been there for too many hours with the open bar.
Even, like, with too many drinks, they're, like, 100% thrown to these crazy people.
It was fun. We had a good time. So, so then my thorn. Oh, my God. Goodness, I don't even know what to say. It will probably lead into my mailbag, into the mailbag question that we have from somebody else that also affects my life. So my thorn is that I did my first event in like 2 years since I sold Wyatt, the makeover horse, on the new horse I'm leasing. And I had a ton of fun and it was great. It was a great like first time get back out there. But man, I am so slow. You know how that is? Like, I'm like jumping a hunter course out there, you know, and they're like, my husband's arms are getting sore, like holding the camera out there for so long. Like, I got to step on the pedal and go. Too slow to get a ribbon, but I had a good time. So that is my thorn, is I'm slow.
You had to slow back into it. Like, that's the whole thing.
I guess it's a little embarrassing. It was pretty slow for beginner novice. Like, come on, man. Get it together. But I still had fun, so it's not really a rose. Or not really a thorn. But speaking of, we're going to roll into the mailbag. So Mary sent this in an email. She wants to know if we have any tips on how to be braver about asking your horse to be more forward. That, like, being okay with the pace so that you're getting the better distance, right? Or, like, the better effort from your horse. I do feel like this is the quote-unquote amateur's dilemma, Mary, so don't feel bad. I mean, I just told you I had time penalties running at beginner novice. That's pretty bad. So, and I'm just getting back into jumping again. So, you guys, like, Jess, Ellie, like, so, how do you, like, trust the momentum, right? That it's going to give you a better
ride. I will
tell
you, I'm the queen of some time penalties. Like, I'm pretty sure
Doug teases you about that.
Yes, 100%. Everybody knows, like, I can teach you some time penalties. Like, that is not the problem. Like, Doug's like, I literally taught that person yesterday, and they were 20 seconds under the time, and you warm them up and they had 3 time penalties. Like, I don't understand.
Uh-oh.
And so I'm not going to say about time penalties, but I do think much more than the time penalties, it is the pace. You don't want to be picking. You don't want them backwards.
Exactly.
So I would much rather your time penalties come from, like, getting lost in space, like going too far out in your turns and not making tidy turns. That doesn't bother me. And that's where, you know, I would say time penalties is okay. Not picking to them or adding strides. I think the biggest thing you need to think is not so much like going forward, but saying, hey, look, you need to think about going forward and just keeping the pace in the activity. So it doesn't need to be a huge stride, because I think that's what scares a lot of adult amateurs is like, or anybody, it scares me when I'm like kicking too fast, right? And I'm like, I'm going to have the biggest step. Well, I'm on like a 16-foot step. That's not what I needed. I need them to kick into the contact, into, and it doesn't have to be a contact if you're a hunter, but like kick it into the thing so that the horse isn't getting longer in the body. It's getting more active behind. And I think a lot of people lose the active behind, meaning that they're not going anywhere. They shut them down, but then they don't add leg. And then their distance goes away because they've picked to nothing. So I think coming around the turn, like before you can even see a distance, I always tell everybody, like, make sure they're active behind, like think quick feet. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they have to be going fast. That means they just need to be active. And I think that gets lost more than anything. So that time penalties, if you're adding strides is something, but time penalties because you're taking your time to like go around the ring is 2 different things. So if you're thinking you're pulling and pulling, think you just get more active. As soon as you land, balance them and think active right away. And that seems to be the best that I can kind of think about for myself that, okay, if I have a time penalty, but I'm still getting all the distance and numbers, that's 2 different things. And the horse is jumping with enough pace.
So something Doug actually told me when I interviewed him for a story years ago. I don't even remember what the story was. I'll have to Google the quote to remember. But Doug told me, fast is smooth and smooth is fast. And I try to like think about that when I'm riding all the time. Like being smooth, but feeling like the horse is taking me somewhere. I'm not constantly nagging him to get him in front of my leg. And like maintaining that pace is just what you need. And like
if you kick 3 times, if you kick 3 times, they don't go forward, just tap them a little bit so they go forward. Like that's what, you know, a whip is for, just to encourage them to go forward. It doesn't mean like they bolt or anything else, but like they've got to be in front of your leg. If you kick them like 5 times and nothing happens, they're not in front of your leg.
Exactly. Yeah. And then everything comes up smoother. I mean, Doug's right.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine that.
It doesn't matter.
So,
I know. I mean, like I said, I might get lost in the turns and that's how like, you know, like they're in front of their leg and they're doing all the distances, but like they went around fence, you know, 10 where they should have gone inside. Okay. Well then of course you're going to get time penalties. I don't really care because you didn't take the track that the course designer, but you're on a greener horse or a younger horse or an unfamiliar horse. Take the time penalty that way, but don't have the time penalty because you're taking back and shutting them down.
Yeah. And what you're saying, Jess, reminds me of a show jumper I rode with for many years that I liked too, who always told me like, it's never going to work if you're trying to like hurry up the pace 3 to 5 strides out. You should have done that in your turn before you, approach that jump.
You're too late.
Right. Yeah. Once you're 3 strides out, don't touch their mouth. Just sit up tall and let them find the spot. There's nothing you can do.
3 strides
out,
you're stuck.
Exactly.
3 strides out, you're stuck. Don't try to put 5 in the 3. Don't put 4 in the 3. You're whatever you got.
Don't
3
get
strides
in the way.
Out, you got it. Yeah.
Exactly.
You're committed, basically.
Yep. That's what you got. That's what you rode in with. That's what you got with your 3 strides
you
out.
You probably should have fixed it 10 out, but you didn't. So here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a – so for the life of me, I can't remember his name right now. But the trainer who broke Berkeley to drive, who was a Grand Prix rider – well, still is a Grand Prix rider, but she lives in the States now. But she was in Canada. And I went up to visit her when we watched the Royal together, and I trained on just a random horse with her trainer. And it's funny how sometimes you can hear it from a different trainer and like it all makes sense.
You're right.
You know? And what he said to me that like really changed my perspective, because I'm always like, oh, I'm moving, I'm covering ground, you know, I've got the good pace. He said, you need to ride the horse's hind legs to the jump.
Yep.
Yes.
And I don't know why that clicked for me, but like when you think about it that way, it's a lot harder to pull back and slow down in those turns because you're trying to basically sit back on the haunches, you're trying to ride forward. And for some reason that just like really clicked with me. So like I try to think about that just in general, and I have a lot of my, you know, adult amateurs who are, you know, just even uncomfortable with, you know, cross rails and things like that. I have them do, you know, extend the canter down the long sides, shorten on the short sides, like those kind of exercises while you're thinking about that, I think gives people more confidence in that bigger stride. Because I think a lot of people, once they open them up, then are afraid that they're not going to be able to get them back, you know? So doing those kind of exercises, I found help a lot.
I think those are great. Those are really great tips. But you just, and even in your, like, your flatting warm up, like, you have to get comfortable with the horse taking you somewhere. So doing, like, a lot of lengthenings and shortenings and feeling comfortable with the adjustability, that always helps me. So, but yeah, if you guys have a question and you want us to answer it on the pod, you could always send us an email like Mary did. Our email address is justine@heelsdownmedia.com, or you can post it in our Facebook group. It's the Heels Down Happy Hour Podcast Lounge. We always have really fun, interesting discussions there, too. And if you want to hear more from us, check us out at heelsdownmag.com. That's where you can find Laura's recent piece about her horse with kissing spines. And you can check out all the latest news there. And also follow us online at Heels Down Happy Hour on Instagram and at Heels Down Mag on Facebook and TikTok. And if you love our show, please leave us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And we want to say thank you to our sponsors this month, HITS, Live Oak International, and EcoGold. All right, guys, that's a wrap. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.